Hey folks, great to have you with us for another Embodied Educator Conversation. I felt humble and nourished by these two wonderful teachers who bring their classrooms to a whole body other level. It's a feast for the soul, well, at least mine, to speak with true solmonauts like these two women. They know how to create a container for their learners to not just connect to the intellectual knowledge and information, but also to the relational level of learning. Supported by their deep training in somatic experiencing, the work of Peter Levine, they know a thing or two about activating full bodies in class and connecting them to the collective. Let me first introduce you to Dr. Kaki Meller. She's a visiting assistant professor at Lesley University's Mental Health and Wellbeing Department and runs her own remote somatic private practice, Somatic Reclamation. She has a collection in fields for study from art therapy and holistic psychology to a master's of education in art-based activism and social entrepreneurship. She's earned her PhD in depth psychology, and Dr. Kaki was, awarded the Peter A. Levine Research Award in Dissertation Leadership by Somatic Experiencing International in 2022 for her dissertation called Somatic Reclamation, Exploring the Lived Experience of Words. Wow. Drawing from extensive training in somatic experiencing, somatic movement therapy and education, and dynamic attachment repatterning, Dr. Kaki has cultivated a robust somatic pedagogy to support students in cultivating inspired relational and transformational learning communities. In her classroom, one day, Emanuela Feliciano Carrascal showed up at Lesley University, and now they work and teach together. So Emanuela is assistant trainer in some of Kaki's HE undergrad programs. Emanuela is an international student from Bogota, Colombia, pursuing a master's degree in clinical mental health and counseling with a specialization in expressive arts therapy. Not surprisingly, she is deeply passionate about the mind-body and committed to honoring the wisdom of the body. She's actively working towards certification as a somatic experiencing practitioner, integrating movement, breath, and creative expression into her therapeutic practice. As a dedicated volunteer with the children's room, she supports bereaved children and teens process their grief through creative expression and body-centered healing, believing in the body's innate ability to release trauma and restore balance. With an unwavering commitment to grief work and holistic healing, she envisions weaving together expressive arts, somatics, and cultural traditions to bring deep transformative healing to the communities she serves. These two teachers teach from the heart, and they move me. I'm curious what speaks to your teacher's heart, and here comes my beautiful conversation with Dr. Kaki Meller and Emanuela Feliciano Carrascal. Enjoy. I see you beautiful too. All right. Kaki Meller, Emanuela Feliciano, welcome here to The Embodied Educator. Thank you so much for making the time to meet. And I'm really, really looking forward to your somatic, juicy, embodied teachings, because you already inspired me at the somatic experiencing 25-year presentation that you had there, or more of an exploration, actually. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting us into this global community of the Embodied Educator podcast. So happy to be here.
So happy to be here.
Thank you. So I need to stay true to my promise of starting with the first question I ask everyone, and that is, who inspired you very much as a, you know, embodied educator, teacher in your journey of how you serve today? Anybody wants to go first?
Manuela, do you want to go first?
Nope, you can.
So it's up to you.
I love this question, Liz, thank you. Because there's so many folks who have inspired and mentored and influenced me. Going back to my own early days as a child. I was thinking immediately when you asked that question of my third grade teacher, Mrs. Movell, who had such an incredible long-lasting influence on my life and my relationship with learning. Actually, I'm getting a little emotional thinking about her because the way that she brought joy and community into the classroom was so nourishing and supportive. And she found so many ways to make learning fun and to make it play and to make it something that we wanted to do together. It was quite a shift from my previous experiences with learning being quite, you're either gonna learn how to do this and do well on whatever way we're gonna test you, or you're not. And that was just never her approach. And she had received from information from previous teachers of mine that I was really struggling to learn how to read. It was very challenging for me, and I had a lot of dyslexic tendencies, still do. And she took it upon herself to find like what would be something that I would enjoy reading about, and how could she meet me in that place of, well, you're excited and you want to engage in this, and your peers want to engage with this. So this is a way that you get to connect and we all get to do this together. So it changed my life. There's no way I would be an educator in academia if she hadn't taken that time and care and the incredible expertise that she had at that point in her career of how to make every student in the classroom feel welcome.
What a gift and a gifted educator it sounds. Oh, wow. Well, thank you for what was her name again?
Mrs. Mobile.
Mrs. Melville. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
I think for me personally, I resonate with my early child education, and I was a Montessori child my whole life until high school, and I gratefully thank my parents every day for having made the choice to educate me in Montessori schooling, simply because from the beginning I just always felt the autonomy in taking decisions for my education and making decisions in how I learned best, and really advocating for my learning needs and my learning style. And that's something that I learned through various different Montessori schools in various different cultures and countries. And I think having that as a solid foundation really helped me gain my voice into what I knew I needed from a very young age. And something about Montessori is so on the aspect of play as well. They make it an experience. They don't make it a theory, which I think I still to this day struggle when it's just theory after theory after theory, although it has its valuable and it's essential. If I can't tangibly feel the experience or relate to it on a somatic level or just really embody it, it's not the same for me. And that all comes from the early education in Montessori, and just also the many people along the way as well that have cared and nurtured that in me, that have given me the patience of also trying to, I don't know if understand is the word, but choose to be on that journey with me and not want to take me out of that, which I think is really valuable for any person in their developmental age, to both emotional, personal, and on an educational level. So I attribute a lot of that to that.
Wow. You both shared such wonderful journeys, and it sounds really like guides that helped you develop who you are personally and reaching out in ways that they to really help your way in. And that sounds so truly embodied and powerful. Look at, you're still talking about this now today and having an embodied experience about that. That sounds very inspirational. So let's dive in how we can help other educators make that profound impact. Yeah. I think maybe it's good to start that the place where I met you, somatic experiencing, is, I believe, a big foundation that connects you to and that connects the way you bring embodiment into education. As the listeners have, they know what somatic is, but somatic experiencing is relatively new, as in I haven't spoken much about it yet. So maybe you can take us with you on how do you take somatic experiencing into a classroom. And maybe you can also support that with a practice to guide us in.
Yes, oh, with joy. Somatic experiencing is a body-based modality for integrating stress trauma activation that was originally developed by Peter Levine, and has, over the past quite a few decades, really grown. Both in its application and the variety of professionals that are using somatic experiencing tools outside of a traditional psychological therapeutic setting.
Yeah, exactly.
Myself very much being one of those. So I started my journey with somatic experiencing in 2017, 2016, around there, as a part of my doctoral program. And I hadn't heard of somatic experiencing much prior to when I was developing my research proposal for my dissertation. And one of my mentors read my proposal and pulled me aside, and we were having a conversation, and she had just completed the 3-year somatic experiencing program and was like, "You know, you are talking about all of these concepts that Peter Levine has all of these books on. Like, I think you might want to check this out and maybe even do the program. I think it would help you to be able to deepen your research and support your participants even more than the skills that you already have." And I was so intrigued and so excited, and I started reading everything that I could about somatic experiencing, and it was like remembering a language that I had forgotten, that I didn't know existed. Because the way that he frames so many of the concepts and interventions rang so profoundly in my system as, yes, this is exactly what has worked for me personally. This is how I want to show up professionally. And as I was completing the 3-year program, I also started teaching at Lesley University in the undergrad psychology department, which is very holistic and expressive art therapy, counseling, applied program. So I felt empowered to bring a lot of what I was learning in the somatic experiencing program into the classroom, not to do therapy on students, but to support our learning community and each individual in it, including myself, to show up more present, more alive, and ready to engage with material from somatic experiencing and in general from trauma literature and from somatics. We know that healing happens when we're in the present moment. Trauma often takes us out of the present moment. Anxiety takes us out of the present moment. Learning also happens in the present moment. We need to be here in order to meaningfully take in the content that we're hoping to engage with. So, in my mind, it made perfect sense to use the same tools that I'm using to support clients in my private practice and coming into the present moment to support my students in coming into the present moment so that we can learn together.
Wow. And you said support to stay pr more present, more alive, and more ready to engage with the theory, which is so beautiful. It's like this, I don't know, stairs, like a gradual combination of what it entails. And do you think it's already a good time to maybe experience it a little bit so we can dive in deeper? Or is there, Emanuela, something you'd like to add first to somatics and what it brought you maybe in your classroom or teaching to get your voice in first?
Sure. I mean, sure. My journey with somatic experiencing started with Khaki in having her as my professor for one of my courses. And I really resonate to what you said, Khaki, being like finding a language that you forgot you've spoken, because I very similarly felt that way as well. And my journey with somatic experiencing, starting as a student, experiencing what we're about to experience that Khaki's going to guide us through. And it just awoke this inner knowing that this is something that I undirectly or indirectly my parents have given me, like specifically more my mom has been able to provide that language for me in very concrete ways my whole life. And now just re entering a classroom and having a moment like the one you're about to experience. I don't want to give too much away.
But you're building tension. I like it.
Like a moment you're about to experience, reprogram my ability to step into a higher level academic classroom and what it means to have somebody that's guiding you through connecting with yourself first. So that you can stay authentic and genuine to your truth in that moment in time, so that then you can tend to that if you have the capacity to at that moment in time, or just set it aside so that you can really be here now. I don't think is something that is, I think it's something that's really rare in higher level education, and something that seems almost like it should be more naturally and more normalized and more used, as it really, really makes a difference. It really, really does make a difference in how you're able to show up for yourself, for your community, for your classroom, and for your learning experience.
Let's say no more.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I start every class that I have the privilege of facilitating with an experiential to support everyone arriving in the room together. This one that I'm going to be sharing with you is adapted from my beginning one somatic experiencing training. So, I've had this one and I've been working with it for many years now and have crafted many different versions of it. So, to begin, I would love to invite you to make any adjustments to your posture that feel especially nourishing and supportive. Finding your feet, finding your seat. Beginning to turn your attention inward. That may look like softly closing your eyes or allowing them to focus on a neutral place in the room. And if it's available to you, perhaps taking the deepest breath you have all day and letting it out with an audible sigh. Notice the sensations of settling. Taking time simply to arrive. One molecule at a In your own time, and as you are ready, I invite you to begin to gently expand your awareness to the group feel and the support and containing quality that we are creating together right now, the three of us on this podcast and everyone listening. Notice, sense, and feel what it's like to start to expand and connect with others in this community. Suspending judgment or meaning-making without trying to change or force anything to happen. In your own time, and as you are ready, I invite you to expand your awareness further still to include the entire embodied educator community. All of those educators who have inspired us and made an impact in our lives. All of the educators globally that are engaged in this important work. In this now moment, and in the entirety of human history. Feeling into the incredible care, wisdom, support and expertise that comes with being a part of this community and lineage. And feeling that presence as tangibly as the chair that you are sitting on, the floor beneath you, rising up to meet you exactly where you are. If it's of interest to you, perhaps even getting curious what it might be like to allow yourself to receive that support 1% more. 1% more. What might that be like? Making note of anything from this experience that you want to remember or take with you. Letting go and releasing anything that does not serve you. ready. Your eyes are closed, allowing them to remain closed as you picture your surroundings in your mind's eye. Connecting with this present community here together. And noticing once again the points of connection between you and the floor or the chair. And getting curious about any impulses to stretch or wiggle, move, or take a sip of something to drink. And giving that to yourself now. And when you're ready, gently blinking your eyes open, allowing the light to come to you and rejoining us here and now together. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a little darker here, and I have some shade, but now you brought me a tear. I was first very glad to surrender, find a moment of pause, and then when you took it to, I felt like you gave me a gift with this exercise, like going through and experiencing, like, yes, we are rippling further, and you're rippling to me, and we're rippling to other educators, and that just got to me. Like, yes, that's what we're doing, and I can also receive it, and it's not just giving. And I felt so touched and emotional by that because I'm good at giving and less at receiving. I'm getting better, and I was like, oh. And then you said 1%. I was like, okay, 1% more to lean. And just also allow to for you to give this to me. So that was such an experience to, yeah, think about. Very personal, actually. I'm not sure if any educator is recognizing this, but from my perspective, wow, that was really profound. Yeah. Thank you.
Allowing yourself to receive, that's a really big deal.
Yeah. It is. And also culturally often very layered. And especially in my family, we're all very ready for everybody. So to really allow to go back, take a breath and make it deeper and feel my connecting to the earth and the ground also gave me a smile, like, yes, in my belly, an inner smile. Yay. Emmanuel, how was it for you?
Like Kaki mentioned before, I've done this exercise countless times now, and it's something that I, in small ways, have tried to integrate in my life and kind of play with the wording of it and see, and just play with it in a way. And it just, you know how in life we just have associations to things that just bring us to a place of calm almost effortlessly. This is one of those things for me, and it's become one of those things for me where allowing myself the few moments that it takes to take five deep breaths, or 10, or two, or even one, really just is one of the biggest ways I can give back to myself and really take that moment. So I've always loved this exercise. I've loved it as a student running into class or feeling like I had a full day or feeling like I had a long day to go, and just giving, allowing myself to be invited to participate and also giving myself the time, to just be with whatever it may be, but just to be with it and know that we are all allowing ourselves to be at the capacity that we can be together is really, really powerful before any sort of experience, you know? So I personally, it's close to my heart. I loved it. I will continue to love it. And hopefully one day I'll even make my own little variation of it to for years to come. Yeah.
And what I hear you say, I think I want to go back to that for a moment. You've done it so many times, and it's so accessible that we it's easily disregarded as it doesn't make any impact. But what I hear you say is the more you do it, the more it creates like also kind of like a muscle, right? To build this capacity for observing internally, externally, how am I doing? What is necessary? What's present to unwrap the layers and be more present by what you're about to teach, learn, share, whatever it is. And that is something I think if you are resisting to this because oh, it's too easy, maybe there's something there.
There's a magical thing about an exercise like this, or at least I found it in my experience, that even though I solely believe in the embodied process and in the somatic process, I also am a human being that some days turning that gaze inward is a bit too much. And it's just, even in just acknowledging that, like even in just trying it and acknowledging that, it's huge progress. And like you said, like this is such an imaginary muscle that is very real, that in the tending to the caring of it, the resting of it, because there's also moments where we need to rest our muscles and recover, you find out so much. It's just so informational to yourself more than anything. Yeah, I think I feel something different every single time I do it, which is really special. It's really special when you can find something in whatever ways works best for you that kind of keeps inviting you to keep being curious with yourself in a gentle way. Yeah.
Okay, when you do this with your students in class, especially in higher education, I believe, right? And how do they, what literally do you say changing in the room? What happens?
Part of what I teach a lot of psychology classes.
Okay.
So we have an opportunity to practice exploring and developing our professional therapeutic skills. And one of the ways that I do that is to do this practice and explain the theory behind all of the different pieces, what the invitations are of what might be happening for folks. And then as we continue to practice this throughout the course, I'll ask students to notice what is it like to be here now compared to when you first walked in the room? What has subtly or not so subtly shifted in you and even in the air that we're sharing? What do you notice energetically in our circle that we're sitting in? And it's really exciting because oftentimes, almost without fail, the first time I ask that, students will name that the quality of the air in the room is different. They feel more present. There's less, frenetic transition. They have actually arrived and caught up with their body, caught up with the time and space, and that they can feel that their peers are more present as well. And that oftentimes it feels a little bit more relaxed. That doesn't mean that there aren't students who push back against this type
Yeah.
of this that feel uncomfortable or don't see the value in doing this, especially re repeatedly.
How do you approach that? Because I think that's actually a very alive question and also doubt for educators to like a boundary to start it because they don't know what they get and they assume the fear or the uncomfortableness and their uncertainty with that. So could you address a little bit more, maybe how to encounter those resistances?
I welcome the whole spectrum of experience, and I'm very explicit about naming that. All of these practices that I bring into the classroom are invitations. So that also gives students the empowered agency to opt in or opt out. I'll also be very clear. I'm going to do a practice like this every class. If that is not something that you're interested in participating in, the entire class is not going to stop doing this practice because one or two people are uncomfortable. So, what do you need to do? As I fundamentally believe, each one of us is an expert in our own lived experience. And I'm trusting and empowering my students to do what they need to do to take care of themselves, to be as present and as possible in the classroom. This practice is a tool that I'm offering that students might connect with in
Yeah.
order to do that. If this tool doesn't work for you, then that's really wonderful awareness and discernment. What are you going to do during that time to allow yourself to arrive? If you don't want to participate in this, are you going to doodle or journal or sit in silent meditation, do your own internal meditation? You are going to know what is going to work for you, or you can continue to experiment and find what works for you. Most oftentimes, if I meet the resistance with that type of welcoming, permissive presence, it melts. And within a couple of classes, those students often start to find new self-awarenesses and participate more. So rather than meeting resistance with resistance, having a really clear boundaries of the container of the space and then empowering them to find what's going to work with them within those boundaries has been a very effective way of working with that resistance in my classrooms. Manuela, you have seen some of those experiences as course assistants.
Yeah, and really it does dissipate exponentially when the like well, as a student, when you get to take choice into how you are stepping into a room, even just I think for a lot of people that don't come from the background or haven't been introduced to somatic practices can feel like, whoa, this feels just like the taken aback by it because you're unfamiliar. It's not even there's like that resistance of such. It's just more, what is happening? I've never had this in a classroom. Is everyone just willing to sit here and do this? So I think what's magical is that in how Khaki holds the container and in inviting the fact that if you are completely disliking this experience, you can share that and nothing's going to happen because you say you're disliking it. Like we're going to continue to hold the space just as we're going to hold the space for other the rest of the people in the classroom. And that just allows for true authentic experiences, which I think that's what makes the student gravitate to it more, like the thrill and the curiosity to what would it be like if I experienced this now? Or what would it be if I experienced this at 1% more capacity? So it becomes more of a self-exploration game than a requirement for the class.
And
Do you know what
also,
I mean?
what it draws to me is that even that disliking is also feedback. And that's also good feedback, useful feedback. And there you find maybe sometimes even more bridges to learning than in the comfortable ones, right? But are you ready enough? And also, daring to go a little deeper, as in, oh, is it really this irritation, or is there some shame underneath, or what is it actually that makes me uncomfortable?
It's so valuable to be aware of that resistance or discomfort, whatever it is, or the excitement, and like it's all information. And rather than saying good information or bad information, just holding all of it and getting really curious and exploring the nuance. I know the exercise is structured where you're starting to focus on yourself and then you kind of gradually expand your awareness, connecting with the classroom community and out and out and out. When I've done this exercise and there's been a rupture in the group dynamics of a classroom, sometimes it can be really uncomfortable for folks to take that step from focusing on themselves to focusing on the classroom, and they don't want to. And I use very intentional language if it's of interest to you. Again, more of those choice points and invitation, and it can become very interesting to see how the information that you get from this exercise changes over time within the same group. Because often times it does help to build the connection across the community, even after there's been a rupture. But giving that space and not making it a forced thing is very, very important, from a learning perspective and just from a trauma responsive perspective. I don't want to force someone back into their body. That is the opposite of what is going to be helpful in that moment. So, how can I meet folks where they're at while still invite, continuing to be that invitational presence of what about now? Do you want to come and join us now? Do you want to try this now? And it's okay to say no.
Yeah, it's so beautiful how you actually showing and really taking us through this transformational approach to learning, which is way more leaning on your self-autonomy and also exploring what's happening in there and it's feeding you. And yeah, it's quite state shifting. So I'm wondering, what is the one tool that really helps you in your classroom to be able for yourself to hold this space, to provide this learning, constant state shifting to address to the needs, and because you're also addressing rupture and rupture needs repair, so you need to show up and facilitate the group. What is one way in for you as an embodied educator to replenish, renourish, so you can keep on showing up and maybe even like a little bit in the moment, because we all do our practice maybe in the morning, and that I'm assuming as you also probably have many places to go. What do you do in the moment?
Yeah. Well, having that foundation of a regular practice is instrumental. That has helped me to get really clear what is mine, what am I bringing into this classroom right now and offering to the field, and what is in the field, and not to take that personally, not to take on the frustration of this student or the rupture that happened here. Because having loving boundaries has been transformational, and it's something that I've talked with Emanuela a lot about, because it's an ongoing practice, and it continues to come up in different facets and layers. Part of honoring the autonomy of the students is honoring that they are on their own journey. And similar to in my private practice, I can't do the work for folks. And if I feel the impulse to try and save or do something for someone rather than allowing them to learn the lesson themselves, like that's doing such a disservice to them, even when it can be really hard and painful to see someone struggling. Being a supportive companion rather than trying to make something happen has been a very valuable lesson for me that I've taken away from somatic experiencing and from dynamic attachment repatterning, which is a somatic relational healing modality. Because It's become a very clear embodied marker for me if I am starting to feel responsible for an individual's learning process.
We've come to the end of part one in our conversation. Please tune in sometime soon for part two. I promise you, Emanuela, her work with the little littles around grief is soul touching. Next to that, it's super relevant for everyone who works with children, as the conversation is also jam-packed with practical tips around regulation, experiencing, and playfulness. Also, Kaki shares one of the most important elements of embodiment for teaching, and that's integrity. Don't forget to share this episode if there is a colleague or a friend around you who could benefit from these two inspirational embodied teachers. Wishing you well, and see you soon for part two.